Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Ben Badler, I'm John Manuel, coming to you from Baseball America World Headquarters here in Durham, North Carolina. And just to show you what this podcast is going to be about, while I was watching the ACC tournament, Ben was making phone calls, working the phones on international prospects. So we're going to talk a little international prospects. Ben's had an epic rundown of international players and the 2010 signing of international players on BaseballAmerica.com all week. What is it, wrapping up the first of next week, I guess, Ben?
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up early next week. We got the AL West still to come, and we've got another list coming up after that, too, with some of the top prospects to watch from the Dominican Summer League and the Venezuelan Summer League. And, you know, we put a lot of focus on some of the unsigned prospects.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting to hear reports on them from scouts, but, you know, these are the ones who are actually on the field getting it done. You know, so I'm actually more interested in some of those guys rather than, you know, some of the players who signed, but, you know, we don't have as much, and really the teams don't have as much information on them.
Absolutely.
Compared to some of the DSL and the VSL guys who, you know, the teams, you know, not only, you know, the stats mean maybe a little bit, but for the most part, it's being able to get to know the players more, work with them, get them some professional instruction.
Yep.
You know, all of a sudden the kid goes from, you know, throwing 88 to throwing, you know, 94, 95, or the coach is helping with some other aspect of his game, and, you know, he takes off. These kids are still young in a lot of these cases. So it's some of those kids, I think, are more interesting to me almost than some of, you know, all of the first-year signed for 2011 guys.
Absolutely.
That we've been writing about at BA.
Guys you know a little bit more about, and these are all guys that are going to – well, not all guys, but a lot of the guys who – come out of these complex leagues are going to be guys that you see in 2011. Some of them will be debuting. Very few, I would say, will debut in a full season in 2011. But these are guys you're going to see go to the Gulf Coast League and pop up on Gulf Coast League top 20 prospect lists. Some of these guys, if they're really good, are going to maybe go Gulf Coast League and finish a year in a short season league, advanced rookie or New York Penn or Northwest League, those kind of guys. I mean, Gary Sanchez was an example of that. And I know that a lot of the organizations take it differently. Some go slower on that process and some speed that process up. So we're going to try to take a step back, try to take a big picture view of what some of these clubs are doing internationally. Ben, what are the things that – and obviously this is – these, especially the DSL and VSL stuff, these are things that we've talked about doing in the past. I think one year Chris Klein tried to do it, and the handbook got in the way, and everything else got in the way, and then inertia. We've never done it. We just do what you usually do. We have a lot of that that seeps in here, Baseball America. So what you're doing is really kind of unprecedented, which is why it's so cool. But let's go right to the top. The thing that gets seems like the most hits that you get on Twitter, or whether the blog posts that get the most comments, are when guys sign for a lot of money. It seems like team people want to know about their team. What did their team do? How did their team do? How active is their team? And you were able to put together an estimate, basically, and it's a pretty obviously pretty good information estimate of what all 30 clubs spent internationally in 2010. Let's start with the top, and then take a little look at the bottom as well, into what organizations were the big spenders. And at the top of this, you know, the Mariners, Yankees, Astros, Pirates, Athletics are your top five spenders. All those teams spending $4.5 million and up. Obviously, the A's at 4.73, they spent almost that much on one player a couple of years ago, and Michael Lanoa. But let's start at the top of the Mariners. And as long as I've been at BA, ancient history now, they've been so active internationally. And it really seems like it all goes back, Ben, to Bob Engel. With the Mariners, why do you think what makes them so successful internationally? What is it Bob? Is it all his scouts, or does it start from the top? Maybe with the fact they're owned in part by Japanese investors.
You know, I think they have a lot of scouts who've been not just in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela for a long time, but in Europe and in Asia as well. Mm-hmm. They have you know, the teams who have been doing this the longest and have been committing the most resources to this for the longest amount of time are the ones that are having the you know, the most amount of success. You know, you look at what the Mariners have done and what the Yankees have done. You know, the Yankees have scouts who've you know, guys at the top who are excellent scouts who've
right.
been doing this for a long time, who have a track record in this game. So
it's been a focus for that organization for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to, you know, obviously Ichiro at the big league level was you know, a direct to the majors guy, but even, you know, Shin-Soo Chu
right.
was a signing for them. He was a big dollar signing at the time. And,
yeah, $1.33 million, I think, if I remember correctly. And he was everybody was in on him. He was in Edmonton. He led Korea to a junior world championship, and he pitched and hit. I mean, everybody was in on him. I bet you the Mariners, I haven't researched that one. I bet the Mariners were not even the top bid for him. I bet other teams spent more money. But my experience with the Mariners has always been that they are willing to spend the money, but that they don't always spend top dollar because they don't have to. They don't have to be the biggest bid because they have these relationships with players, and they seem like they sell very well their track record of developing international players.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, too. You have to, you know, if you're a 16-year-old kid or you're the parent of a 16-year-old
right.
kid in the Dominican Republic, you know, I don't know how much they think about this. I think a lot of the times it's just how quickly can we sign and help our families in
right.
a lot of the cases. But, you know, at the same time, you know, not every family in the DR or Venezuela is like that, but, you know, it varies from case to case. But if you sign at 16, you're probably, if everything goes according to plan and you make the big leagues, you're probably going to be in the minor leagues for 5 to 7 years
right.
if you're going to make the big leagues by the time you're 21 to 23. And then you're going to be in the major leagues with that same team for another 6 to, you know, maybe 7 years.
Right.
So you're talking about the next 10 to 15 years of your life.
Yeah.
Obviously, you get traded or released or you know, other things can
sure.
you can move around to a different organization,
but
through
you could
various means. But
you could be locked in for a
yeah.
decade plus with that organization.
And management is and front office is going to turn over, but you should want to feel pretty good about the organization that you're going to be spending possibly the next 10 to 15 years of your life with. So, you know, bottom line is, yeah, almost all the time the most money is going to be the most important factor. But, you know, those relationships and some of the, you know, other tie-ins that you can do to show that you're not, that you know how to develop and take care of your Latin players is certainly, or your international players,
right.
especially if you're bringing in,
yeah,
you know, Asian players, yep. You know, the A's just signed a catcher from South Korea for, I think it was $510,000.
Right.
You know, it's, now you're talking about, you know, that's not really an organization that's done a lot over in that region. So to be able to bring in a guy like that and have him learn how to catch a pitching staff of people who speak Spanish, people
right.
who speak English, you know, it's that's tricky. So it's, you know, I'm interested to see how that, you know, they're able to develop him. But, you know, certainly the Mariners, you know, the Yankees and some other organizations who have, you know, track records with players from all over the world, the Twins,
right.
Especially in Europe and the Pacific Rim. You know, these are organizations that have history being able to develop these guys. So it's, I think it does give them, it's not, you know, again, the money is almost always the most important thing.
Right.
But that can certainly be helpful for teams.
Certainly seems like the Mariners are willing to spend, and they're always in that mix. They're not like they're the fourth or fifth bidders, but they, you know, maybe I'm thinking too much of the Felix Hernandez situation where supposedly other teams like the Braves offered more money, but you know, they seem like they have such a good track record of developing those players as well. I mean, before he got hurt, I mean, I always loved Jim Callis' line about Chris Snelling. He was the Australian Pete Reeser, you know, a guy who flashed a talent but never could stay healthy enough to be an impact major leaguer. You know, they've signed players from all over the world. And it just, like you said, they seem like they're the organization that is most cosmopolitan. Every organization has had fits and starts or stretches where they've had good international signings, not so good, or they've had a hot streak in one country or another one. I don't think anyone else can match the Mariners for Europe. Greg Hallman, I know, hasn't necessarily worked out, but Alex Liddy,
mm-hmm.
Curacao, Panama, Colombia,
Nicaragua,
everywhere. They are everywhere. I mean, it's amazing the reach of the Mariners organization. Another thing that stood out on this chart, Ben, are your top 10. I should go down in top 10 organizations in terms of amount of money they spent. Astros, Pirates, and Athletics really are the three organizations that stick out as not having been tremendously active in the past. Let's start with it seems like the Astros and Pirates. First, they're obviously both in the same division, but I guess the other common link there is that both those organizations have really started investing a lot more money. Before they could sign the players, they were investing in infrastructure, I guess, in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, those teams both built new academies in the Dominican Republic last year, and you know, they spent a lot of money on the academies, and they spent a lot of money on players to put
fill the,
in
right.
those academies. You know, the Pirates with Heredia and the Astros with Ovando, those guys aren't going to play in the academies, but you know, I think Ovando was probably there for their Dominican Instructional League.
Yeah.
You know, and they put you know, the Astros had some bunch of interesting guys playing on their DSL team who they signed last year. You know, Jose Montero is a right-hander who gets comps to Simone Castro. You know, I think he's going to probably be one of the top prospects in the Gulf Coast League next year. So, you know, the Pirates obviously were heavy on Miguel Sano
right.
a couple of years ago. They probably, two years ago, probably would have been their big international coming out party if they had been able to sign him. But, you know, they weren't, but I think it still looks good for them that Sano is... has come as advertised.
Right.
It shows that they know what they're doing,
yeah.
and not that they need it, because obviously Rene Gallo, who used to be with the Indians directing their international department, has a pretty impressive track record with
Victor
limited
Martinez,
budget.
Johnny Peralta, Carmona,
mm-hmm.
His track record, his run there of like five-figure signing bonuses was pretty unbelievable. You talk about we've had a lot of questions about like scouts who had an impact on an organization. Rene Gallo was a guy who, for a limited budget, Sal Agostinelli is another one with the Phillies who have produced a lot of bang for not a lot of bucks.
And the Rockies, I mean, the Rockies are more of a mid-market
right.
team and or mid-budget team this year, but it's impossible to argue with what they've done. But and you got to give a lot of credit to the owners of these clubs too. I mean, look at you know the Pirates; they brought in new ownership and they're
point.
Building this new academy, and they're backing up. They spent more money on amateur bonuses than anybody last year, including the draft and,
right.
and international, and they're willing to give, you know, you can have, there's a lot of great scouts in Latin America who just don't have the money to go out and spend players, and I know because, you know, they talk to me,
right.
and it's awesome, and I appreciate it, but, you know, and a lot of the times it turns out everything they say is right, but they just don't have the money to go out and sign these players because they don't have... you know, ownership in some of these cases, and some of them are, you know, in Washington's case, I understand why you'd be very hesitant to,
absolutely.
You know, they have, you know, it's probably one of the richest owners in the game.
He is the richest owner in the game.
And, but I would be very hesitant to spend more than $1 million, which they didn't do, you know, obviously with Yunesky Maya being a Cuban defector, a bit of a
right.
different situation, but for these, they don't want to get burned like they did with Ismael and Gonzalez. They want to take their time and you know, build the infrastructure and build the right systems, get the right people in place that they can trust.
It's amazing the bottom of your list, the bottom five organizations, Ben, on this list, they all have it's an easy reason to understand why they don't spend a lot internationally. The Dodgers are at 30, which is kind of sad in a way. I'm not a Dodgers fan or anything, but the organization of the O'Malley's, the organization that pioneered international baseball, that started the kick of Japanese big league players coming to the United States major leagues with Nomo, you know, signed Chan-ho Park out of Korea, opened that market up. Hong Chi Kuo, I think, is still the biggest bonus out of Taiwan, isn't it? $2 million?
It's up there, yeah.
I mean, so they were pioneers in the Far East. They were obvious pioneers in Latin America back in the day. And now, because of the McCourt's ownership and lack of cash flow, and they still are having some modest success with Latin American players. See Ruby De La Rosa. Basically, they're limited to signing guys. They can't sign anyone when they're 16, pretty much, right? Because they would basically blow their entire budget on one 16-year-old player if they were in the mix for top 16-year-olds, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, you can sign 16-year-old players for, you know, $30,000-$40,000 still, but you just have to find the ones who maybe are – less visible, don't have proper representation, or guys who are just really, really raw,
yeah.
and you hope you can develop them. But
we're talking about raw by a 16-year-old Dominican standard, which is
right.
a whole different category of raw than other players.
And they can do that, but so can the Yankees, and so can the Mariners, and
correct.
They're doing that, and they're coming up with, you know, Michael Pineda, and they're coming up with guys like that in addition to the guys that they're signing for a lot of money, like Felix Hernandez.
Pineda had the lowest signing bonus, I believe, of any player on a top 100.
Yeah,
or second lowest.
After
second
De La Rosa,
lowest.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
So, I mean, you can have De La Rosa. I mean, they signed Carlos Santana. Give him credit for that, at
sure,
least. But,
sure.
But yeah, it's hard to compete. I mean, the market has changed so much that, you know, like we talked about, you know, the Indians used to sign, you know, they got all these players
right.
for a very small amount of money.
Right.
But now the market's changed, and you look at, you know, what the Pirates did before ownership became more heavily involved in financing and putting the resources.
In the McClatchy regime.
Yeah, and you know, when new ownership came in and starts building the academy and starts putting more money and resources into being able to for signing bonuses for these players, all of a sudden, you know, we don't judge players by the money, but there is a the better players typically are going to get more money. It doesn't quite always work that way. There's some
right.
funny things that go on.
There's some Manoah Pineda things that happen.
Yeah, there's some funny things that go on in the market down there, but it certainly helps to be able to still find those bargains, but also have the money that when you really like a player who is visible and has a good agent and understands the player's market value, to be able to go out and still sign that player, you know, like a Sano or a Heredia
right.
or Castillo
yeah.
or Peguero.
It had to be in the mix for those players.
Yeah.
I mean, 50 of our top 100 players signed for seven-figure signing bonuses, and that's counting the Latin American players and the drafted players. So I think we talked about the Dodgers just really aren't in that mix for those top-dollar players. Neither are the White Sox. The White Sox also, Ben, down here at the bottom with the Dodgers, obvious reason for that with Dave Wilder, the scandal he was involved with you know, coming back from Latin America. There's been arrests there, federal counts. You have the Angels at 28 with Clay Daniel. Was their scouting director. He also lost his position. So it's understandable. Again, they're both starting from scratch. The Giants and the Nationals, the next two teams at 26, 25, Giants with their highest dollar signing bonus at the time was ever. Angel Villalona, he's in prison or awaiting trial in the Dominican Republic. And the Nationals, like we mentioned, with Smiley Gonzalez. So those five teams at the bottom, the one that's the most startling to me still is the Dodgers. I mean, their history is so strong internationally. Do you have any, I guess, which of those five clubs, do you think any of those five clubs have a chance to get back into being players? Any indication any of those clubs are going to be players again
yeah,
anytime soon?
Yeah, I think the Giants will be, and I think they kind of already have started so this year. They've made some signings. They signed Simone Mercedes, who is, let's see, now he's 19 years old. He also aged a couple of years overnight
okay.
because he was a guy who was suspended for a year because he used to be Jeffrey Tapia, and now he's Simone Mercedes, and you can't do that, obviously. And he, you know, but he's a guy who has now stuff, you know, sitting low 90s up to, I think, 94, 95 with, you know, legitimate now above-average breaking ball. That's got some depth and some sharpness to it. They gave him $400,000. I think it's that deal's probably still contingent upon him, you know, getting his visa, as all
right.
these, you know, higher-dollar players are. So I think you're going to see the Giants. I probably wouldn't be surprised if they'd already spent more this year on international players than they did, you know, all of last year. So I think that's more of just a 1 year blip where and it was a down year for talent, I think, overall, if you're looking
right.
at the top end of the market. So
that's
you know, there's no reason to, you know, there's no reason to pay $2 million to a guy who you think is worth, you know, a million, or
right.
a million to a guy you think is worth $300,000.
That's one of the things that is so amazing about the Yankees being second in spending this year. I mean, the Yankees, they have the resources, like you said, they have a long track record of being active internationally. But I remember talking to the you know Yankees officials while doing the top 30, and you've spoken with Yankees officials as well on this, and this was not a big year, and they went more for athletes in the draft in 2010 than they usually have, whereas as a matter of course in the last decade, the Yankees have looked to Latin America for players up the middle, catchers, shortstops, center fielders, and some power arms. But they've really done a better job of that in the draft lately, especially last year. They went very heavy for athletes, Cito Culver, Mason Williams, Angelo Gomes. And part of the reason they said was they didn't see those caliber of athletes in Latin America in 2010, yet they still spent the second largest amount of money. But it was really on power arms for them. It seems like the guys who did, even in a shallower talent pool, there was still a lot of money spent in Latin America. And the biggest things as usual, that the players who drew those big bonuses were the power arms and the power bats. Is that, that's usually the constant, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, power is a very easy tool to see. So, you know, when you have a guy like Ariel Ovando hitting balls out to every field in batting practice, it's pretty obvious that he's, you know, and you see his size, his bat speed, the leverage, extension that he gets in his swing.
Right.
You know, that's just an obvious tool, something like that, or speed, or arm strength. So, yeah, if you have a big power, you know, Phillips Castillo is another guy who has big power. It sounds like maybe his hit tool's a little bit more advanced. But, yeah, you got some guys with some big power who got a lot of money and yeah, and certainly some power arms. Cardona signing with the Blue Jays, being able to touch 93 or 94, I think it's it
on
is now.
On Heredia. Heredia. Like power arm and also some feel for pitch, it seems like.
Yeah, Heredia definitely has more feel for pitching, I would say, than Cardona. That's certainly the consensus. I think Heredia could be a power arm, but, you know, even if he doesn't fill out and gain velocity, although being someone who just – he's going to play the entire season almost next year
at 16
in the Gulf Coast League, and he's already touching 94, 95 in instructional league.
He's
which
like 6'2", 165, something like that.
Yeah, you know, he's – I mean, he signed it, I think, 6'5".
Oh, wow.
And now he's, you know, 6'6". You know, when he signed, he was – he had almost no strength. It sounded like he was just going off natural arm speed to generate that kind of velocity, which
wow.
is even more incredible. Now he starts eating a little bit more and working out, and you know, being 16 is like almost like natural steroids.
Yeah,
which,
exactly.
Just because of how much
that's what
you
your body
in your body.
That,
yeah,
that's it. That's exactly right.
So you know, his velocity could take off, but at the same time, you know, even if he's you know. Just low 90. Even if he just
right.
has a plus fastball, in terms of his velocity, he's still a guy who has, you know, he casts his curveball a little bit sometimes, but he's got feel for his secondary pitches, feel for his changeup.
He spins a breaking ball. It sounds like his changeup is very advanced for a 16-year-old from anywhere, no matter international or domestic.
Yeah, and he was pitching, you know, in games pretty regularly. For his team over there, so he's a guy who's got some feel and some experience, even at 16. So he's definitely a guy who's got a combination of, you know, as much polish as you can call for a 16-year-old. He has that, and he has the upside to potentially be a power, you know, top of the rotation kind of arm, but he's still 16.
Yeah, he's more than a power. He's pretty intriguing because he's a power arm who's more than a power arm, I guess is the a way to put that. Speaking of Heredia and Ovando, those are the two tied for second largest bonus. Both of them, I guess, at $2.6 million, right in that range. Tim Stevens on our Facebook page has a good question that kind of ties into both those players. How difficult is it for a franchise to establish credibility internationally so it can compete with teams such as the Mariners, Red Sox, Yankees, Braves, and Tim includes the Reds. You know, I don't think of the Reds at that same caliber or international organization as the first four. But it seems like the number one way that teams try to establish themselves, Ben, is make that statement signing. I guess that's part of it, but there has to be some other follow-up with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you have money, teams will teams are very willing to show you their players, no problem. I mean, it's maybe teams make statement signings, you know.
They don't seem like they always work.
Yeah.
I'd say their chances of working are like 25%. I mean, I'm thinking of the Smiley Gonzalez signing. I'm thinking of who was the right-hander the Brewers signed?
Rolando Pascual.
That's right. Pascual was kind of a statement signing. You know, even the Mets, Fernando Martinez and Diolis Guerra in 2005 are kind of statement signings. I mean, that doesn't mean that their bonuses weren't legit. They weren't good players. You know, they signed for a combined $2 million, but you know, the Mets really made a big deal out of those signings. Ariel Ovando, you know, the press release that we've talked about, the Astros put out with, you know, six scouting reports that their scouts had turned in, seemed like they really wanted to make a statement as well on that. Again, he's a legitimate player, like we're talking about. His power is big-time power, but it seems like there has to be more than just throwing money at a player. There has to be follow-up with these other things we're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if you're willing to offer a guy $1 million, teams or agents and trainers are willing to listen to you. if the Marlins wanted to offer somebody $800,000 tomorrow for to sign with them, and that was the highest offer that anyone was offering,
Right.
that I'm sure the agent or the trainer would take it.
Making
It
a
doesn't really
statement.
matter what your history is, I would say, with past signings. But where it comes into play is, it's around July 2nd. You're talking about June, and you want to be able to see a guy, but especially a pitcher. Well, your pitcher can't throw every day leading up to July 2nd. Sometimes they do, and that's why some of these guys' velocities are all over the place, and they just get run down, especially in June, or maybe right after July, July 2nd, if they haven't signed yet. So, if you're, the Yankees or the Mariners, and teams know you have a lot of money to spend, maybe they'll send you, and you say, "We want to see this pitcher of yours again." You're probably, if you're an agent, you're probably going to say, "Yeah, let's you can see him, sure, no problem."
Absolutely.
Whereas if the one of these teams at the bottom wants to see him, you're probably going to say, "Well, why would I do that when there's more financial upside for me to show this pitcher to one of these bigger spenders in the market where I can maybe make more money having them be seen." But the statement signings, I don't know. Usually the statement is just, we're willing to throw away some of our money, it seems like, with some of these guys, 'cause
That's been the history. I think you're right about that. You know more about it than I do, but I agree with you. That's the track record, it seems like, of those statement signings. Got a couple more questions here on Twitter as well. JD Iglesias asked at Baseball America, heard any word from scouts on Carlos Martinez's bullpen sessions this spring? Carlos Martinez is the Cardinals right-hander who was what, Carlos Matias was his name previously?
Yeah, he was Carlos Matias. He had signed with the Red Sox. He was an interesting guy, but nothing like he is now. All he got suspended and then becomes, that so that contract is, void. He doesn't get his bonus.
So he's
And, but
working
then he
out.
becomes a free agent. So he's suspended, but he's a free agent. He can sign once his suspension is over. And by the time his suspension is over, he's throwing up to 99 miles an hour
And now we've had a
with
spate of these,
control.
and we've had a spate of these players who've improved their stock essentially after being suspended for a
And
year.
it's I think Dominican law might be something that plays into it. It tends to be very, I guess, pro worker, if you could call it, or in effect, anti-team, because it's kind of ridiculous that Carlos Martinez can sign with the Red Sox and then basically lie to them about his
Oh,
his
something very fundamental.
yeah they're lying he's lying about his he gives them fake paperwork.
It's fraud.
Yeah, it's
He's committing
fraud.
fraud.
He's attempting to defraud the Red Sox and defraud the U.S. government in turn when he tries to get his visa, his work visa, to come over, which
Not
last I
insignificant.
checked, those are felonies.
Not insignificant.
So he's committing he's committing fraud, and then he's getting suspended, but the Red Sox, he's allowed to benefit from that. The Red Sox, in my opinion, the Red Sox should have the right of first refusal, and it's
I
something that's been
agree.
brought up to MLB teams. Don't like that rule that,
Because when they
you.
sign these guys, Ben, they're not just signing them. They've worked these players out. In many cases, there's been some instruction involved there, correct? I mean, at the very least, with all these clubs, when you work these players out, you're not working them out with one scout or two scouts. There's some, especially a guy who's getting a decent amount of investment, there's some coaches involved there, is there not?
Oh yeah, and guys have benefited from, working out with coaches. In Martinez played in the Dominican Summer League. There's other guys who played in the Dominican Summer League too before their contracts were approved, which was allowed until this year. Now that rule's been
Scrapped.
overturned, who've benefited and their velocity's gone up, and then MLB says, "Well, actually, we went and found out that you're lying about your age, so you're suspended." But the good thing for you is now you're throwing 94 instead of 88,
And now
so
you're a free agent.
yeah, so now your value is going to be even higher when your suspension is over. So it's kind of ridiculous. I'm not saying the Cardinals did everything look perfectly by the book, and they
Absolutely.
did their homework, and you know, you look at some of the money. You know, Michael Anoa got, you know, $4.25 million, and he was, you know, a great arm at the time, but he was thrown up to 94. Cardona gets $2.8 million. He was up to 93 when he signs. Then you have Carlos Martinez, who's throwing 99 and hit 100 in instructs.
And he's
in their Dominican Instructional League, and he signs for 1.5. So it was a outstanding signing by the Cardinals. They didn't do anything wrong, and they, you know, they deserve to, you know, they did everything right.
The
but
system,
the Red
system
Sox
is,
also
yeah.
did everything right.
That's right.
And now Martinez is saying he comes out with a different name, but not a different age, and he's still. And the Red Sox lose out on that. I mean, he wasn't lying. I would be surprised if he was only if he only had a different identity.
Correct.
But
that's a fair assumption.
Yeah, he's but you know, he's a tremendous pitcher, and the Cardinals have a tremendous arm. But if I was the Red Sox, I would you know, and I imagine they're not too happy about that situation. So it's. It's a rule that I think a lot of teams wish was different, where players should not be allowed. You know, it's a good rule. They just started suspending players that with this rule. I think it was it'll be in May 2008, so almost 3 years ago. They just started doing it, and they really just started overhauling their investigations.
Right.
So to you know, to put some muscle behind it, they put the suspensions in there, and that's a good thing that there's punishments for players who are, you know. Attempting to defraud Major League Baseball out of, you know, and you add it all up, you know, tens of millions of dollars right. sometimes. It's, yeah, that's a good thing, but players shouldn't be able to benefit from the fraud.
I like your idea.
Teams shouldn't suffer for, you know, maybe the Red Sox didn't pay the bonus to Martinez. They didn't have to pay the bonus, but, you know, there's $160,000 of your budget that's at least tied up
right.
while he's being investigated, and there goes all of your time and resources that you spent and energy spent scouting this player
right.
that you could have spent, you know, you could have spent your time on somebody else.
I like the idea of that team that had the first contract voided, the suspension, that team has that right of first refusal, basically, and that, you know, or that team has that player's rights. You know, for who knows, I don't know how you can get around that. Maybe those rights shouldn't extend in perpetuity, but there's got to be some better way than what they're doing right now. A lot of these, but as we've seen in the draft, anytime you try to address one thing, some unintended consequences are going to pop up
elsewhere.
That's
what happened here.
That's exactly what happened here. One more email question on Twitter. You can follow us at Baseball America from Appy Astros. You mentioned, aside from Evando, at the Astros had some signings. I'm remembering a pitcher named Felix, whose name is popping into my head. I thought his last name was
Michael Feliz. Yeah,
Feliz. I'm sorry. They signed Geronimo Franzua for $250,000. Anybody else from that pool, the non-Ovando pool, stick out for you with the Astros, or is that going to be maybe someone from their DSL or VSL teams? Like we
talked
about
earlier? Signed. You know, Feliz is an interesting guy. You know, it's interesting. He was a guy who was suspended. He signed with Oakland for $800,000, and then he tested positive for steroids. So, you know,
laugh.
It doesn't mean he can't pitch. It doesn't mean he's, you know, a bad guy or anything like that. I'm not saying that, but
right.
just from you're not signing him to help your Gulf Coast League team in, you know, next year win games.
Right.
You're signing a kid to help you. Hopefully win games at the major league level in, you know, 5 to 10 years or so.
Right.
So my concern is that if you give a kid, you know, if you're a 25-year-old man or a 30-year-old man and you take steroids,
right.
that has a different effect on your body than if you're 16 years old and you're just being given steroids with no thought to how – just that you're giving a 16-year-old kid steroids in the first place,
right.
a 16-year-old body
right.
is not meant to have steroids.
It doesn't really need them,
yeah,
like you said.
Yeah.
I mean, natural. That's when your body's naturally producing wads of testosterone.
Yeah, it was certainly can be a problem for I remember what I was like when I was 16, just natural testosterone.
Yeah.
Certainly. But yeah, and it's being just given to these kids with no thought for – well, what are you going to do after you take steroids? The reason Manny Ramirez got caught on his steroid test is because of the hormones that he was taking after he took the steroids.
Right.
His after his cycle of steroids to make sure that his health would be, you know, to minimize side effects, to maintain the gains that he had from, you know, the steroid use.
So you don't have to keep on cycling to try to basically equalize
his body. I mean, what you do is you take the steroids and then you have a, you know, you take other hormones to, you know, make sure that you don't kind of crash and, you know, have a lot of negative side effects afterwards. Whereas these kids are being given steroids at 16 and then they sign and then, you know, they get their money and what do the trainers care after that?
Right.
You know, if they're going to give them steroids, once they sign, they're not going to give them, you know, the other stuff that they're going to need to come down off of them. And so what I'm concerned about is some of the long-term health ramifications, you know, obviously on a personal level for these kids. But if you're thinking about it from a team perspective, well, what's going to happen to their,
right,
you know, not just their joints and their tendons down the road, but their internal organs that are going to be damaged when you're going to need these guys to play for you when they're in their 20s even. It could be, it could be some serious health setbacks down the road. So obviously from a personal level, we care about these kids, but from a performance standpoint, if from the team's perspective, you have to be worried about what's going to happen to their bodies.
The connective
tissue.
When
you need
them
to pitch for your major league team.
Just the fact that those players are at 16, there's so much growth that your body's still going to go through. You're going from a boy to a man.
Yeah.
And the damage that can be done to connective tissue, to muscles, to
your heart,
internal organs, like
your
brain.
It's
unbelievable. And like you said, also, this is not like steroids from your local dude down at the GNC or at the gym. They're a little bit different in the Dominican. I mean, the reputation is these aren't always the cleanest operations either. The cleanest drugs, but it's the whole thing is clearly,
no one's getting it from Balco.
That's right. This is not the cream in the clear. This is not designer. No,
but I mean, but Feliz is an interesting arm. He was up to, I think, 93 or so. I think we have it in on a report online. But you know, he wasn't while he was on steroids or before he tested positive for steroids, and then after it, he's, you know, not throwing quite as hard. Surprise, surprise. But
right.
I think once he fills out, he's got a big frame. He's got feel for a breaking ball. So he's got projectable stuff. He's got projectable size. He could be interesting. The guy I really like on that staff, though, or the guy I should say that I really liked in that of their signings last year, was a guy we mentioned before, Jose Montero.
Okay.
You know, I think he's going to be one of the better arms in the Gulf Coast League next year, assuming he's going to, you know, pitch in the GCL, because he was a big signing. He was, you know, $350,000 is a lot of money to give an arm down there, and he's 89, 93, good slider. He's got some sink on the ball. He throws strikes. He knows how to attack hitters. You know, he's going to have to bring his changeup along. But I would say that's the case for 95% of kids in that league. So, but I think he's a guy who, if I'm looking at that, you know, Friends was an interesting arm from the left side, but Montero for me is probably the best of that group.
And good timing for him because Jesus Montero is going to graduate to the big leagues this year. So maybe Jose Montero becomes the best Montero left in the minor leagues. Ben Badler dropping mad knowledge on the Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel making 20-year-old hackneyed hip-hop references. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other just interesting players from this class of 2010, Ben. I think that kind of the white whale of the 2010 class was Edward Salcedo. I mean, he's kind of been an internal joke here in the office, like a ghost of a player. Does he really exist? That kind of thing. He's been really on the map. It seems like since, 2007, 2008? Was it 08 when his name first popped up?
Yeah, he reportedly had a $2.9 million deal with the Indians, which at the time, in 2008, I think it was, which at the time was,
that would have been a record,
a landmark bonus. I mean, this was, you can look at some of the top bonuses of all time, Anoa, Sano, Sanchez, what Wagner Mateo would have been.
Right.
You know, and Cardona now. You know, those have been all since that.
That $3 million had not been pierced, I don't believe, at that time.
So, and the Indians said, the Indians didn't comment on it. That's know, that's their policy. But you know, he was with Boris, and his agency, you know, recently acknowledged it publicly in print, which I know I had never seen them do publicly. So you know, there was he was certainly a high profile player. There were a lot of questions about his age, and you know, he's still using the same age he was given teams back then.
And the same name. Both, yeah. Those are both good signs.
So he, you know, he switched agents. You know, he went to join the Born to Play Academy with Edgar Mercedes, and you know, just like that, he gets his all his paperwork cleared up. So and is allowed to sign. MLB says he's a free agent. So it's and he signs for 1.6 with the Braves, who you know, have never spent that much money before on an international amateur player in Latin America. So
that's amazing.
He's got he's got ceiling. He's got bat speed and raw power. Not really sure why they jumped him from the DSL to
Rome.
South Atlantic League.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to some pro scouts who saw him there, and you know, they, you know, a lot of them like to ask me about the Latin players, but they were kind of surprised at how raw he was, and you can see that in the numbers both offensively and defensively. You know, I think I would have liked to have seen what he could have done in the Gulf Coast League, but he's a guy who just, you know, from my understanding, he kind of questioned whether he even wanted to play baseball. I mean, he's just sitting around the DR for 2 years. All he wants to do is play baseball and get signed, and he just can't sign with a major league team. He's because they won't let him, and you know, he wasn't really in playing shape. They had to work him and work him out, get him back into baseball shape. And it's not like they play a ton of game situations down there anyway. A lot of them are still pretty raw. So, you know, I think he's still raw. You know, he's not 16 anymore. He's
right.
18. But
it'll be 20, actually, yeah. In July this year. So.
So it's, you know, it's not like he's an old man by any means. It's still young, but, you know, he's got some upside. I don't think he's going to play shortstop. I think he probably moves over to third base, maybe right field. But, you know, there's offensive upside there. I don't think he's like a Miguel Sano type
right.
of player. But, you know, there's the tools are certainly there. He's just raw, and I think he's going to benefit from being able to play baseball and benefit certainly from, you know, the Braves do a nice job with their development staff and developing, you know, teaching hitters. Obviously, not that they're – you know, Hayward and Freeman,
right,
but, you know, some
right.
guys other than that as well. But
yeah, but and the thing is, I almost think that's one of the reasons why the Braves were so willing to go to great lengths to sign Salcedo is that their lower levels of their farm system are very pitcher-heavy. And after graduating Hayward and Freeman, there's not a lot of position player talent in the Braves system. They went heavy for position players in the 2010 draft, guys like Matt Lipka, Todd Cunningham. And then again with Salcedo, I think it was really a focus for them in 2010 to go get some hitters to replenish the lower parts of their farm system. And internationally, that wasn't really the strength of the class. It seemed like it was more live arms, it almost seems like, were the guys who commanded the biggest bonuses as opposed to the hitters. Am I reading that right as far as the strength of the class? Is it more on the pitcher tip?
Yeah, and I think there were, you know, some of the outfielders, and you know, there were some guys who were interesting. But, yeah, I think just Jim Callis and I were excited that he signed because now we don't get emails and chat
right.
questions every week asking
that's right.
where Edward Salcedo is in the world right now.
I think most of the questions you're getting now are from Yankee fans. Jose Rafael De Paula, they just signed another player whose name is I'm blanking on.
Juan Carlos Paniagua.
Okay, that's right. John Bread and Water.
There you go.
That's right. So two players for a combined $1.6 million, both of whom had – now, De Paula, had he been suspended previously or
DePaula,
he's just older?
De Paula had been suspended.
So
you know,
both
had
been suspended, I guess?
Yeah, both of those guys had been suspended. De Paula, you know, he's drawing interest from, you know, the Mariners and the Red Sox and the Rangers as well. Huge upside guy who has, you know, up to 96 with a good delivery and feel for his secondary stuff. You know, in 2 weeks, supposedly he turns, I think it's 20 years old, according to his new paperwork.
But he doesn't even have a visa yet, correct?
No.
He's still trying to get a work visa.
His contract is still contingent upon his ability to get a work visa, as is Paniagua's. You know, anytime, really any of these players who sign for a huge sum mm-hmm. of money, their contract's going to be based on their ability to secure a visa. But obviously in and especially in DePaula's case, and or any guy who's been suspended before for lying about his age and his identity, maybe it's going to be a little bit of a longer process involved. So, you know, he signed in November. It's March now. You know, I would have been shocked if he had gone it this quickly. So I don't think there's anything to worry about there, just based on the time frame.
Right.
But, you know, at some point in the future, you know, we'll see if he gets his visa. And if he does, I'm excited to see what he does, because he has about as much upside as anyone in that class. I mean, there's other kids there who signed for, you know, pitchers who signed for 4 or 450 who, you know, are up to 92, 93, and it's just projection. But DePaula is a guy who has now stuff
and physicality.
Definitely physical guy.
That sounds like that's the difference with him, is that he's physical enough to maintain a delivery, physical enough to maintain stuff, and that you don't have to project as much on this guy.
Yeah, pretty clean mechanically, pretty clean arm action. So he's a bigger guy than Paniagua or Carlos Martinez. Doesn't throw quite as hard, but, you know, if you can get it up to 96, I wouldn't be surprised if there were some, you know, 97s or 98s in the future. But, you know, even if he's just sitting, you know, 92 to 94, 91 to 94, with, you know, 96 in his back pocket and, you know, a couple of good secondary pitches and, you know, good delivery and good arm action, that should lead to, you know, pretty good control. If he can, you know, figure that out, it's a little, you know, tougher to tell sometimes when you're not seeing them stretched out for 5 and 6 innings, you know, regularly over games. It's a little harder to project, but, you know, he should... there's certainly a chance that he could have that, so that's certainly you know, a three-pitch guy with a good delivery, good body, good mechanics.
A lot to be excited about.
Absolutely.
Let's wrap up with a couple of more general questions, I guess. We've talked about the Astros and the Pirates kind of being organizations that have jumped up a little bit, made more of a presence, spent a little bit more money, invested more in Latin America and internationally. Is there a club or two out there that is poised to do that in 2011, 2012? Is there somebody who's on the come, maybe? Has hired a couple new scouts, trying to make more of a concerted effort in Latin America or Europe or somewhere else? Looking forward, who you know people might want to look out for in the next couple of years internationally?
Yeah, I think the Tigers are starting to do some more. You saw that this year they signed Danry Vasquez, a Venezuelan outfielder, for $1.2 million. Corner outfielder guy who can hit a lot, but right now he just, you know, all these guys for the most part just need to gain strength, and that's what's
right.
You know, that's one of the things that's tough to project. You know, how strong is he going to get? You know, that was you know, some scouts wonder how much power he's going to have for a corner, but you know, he can hit. He should be able to, you know, he'll probably play maybe all three outfield positions just to get some experience there, but really he's more of a corner guy. Whose bat is gonna have to carry him? So, but I think the Tigers might be a team like that. We talked about the Giants earlier. I think
right. They're
probably gonna get more heavily involved down the road. You know, you saw the A's make some strides this year. The
right.
Cubs are, you know, starting to do. You know, they've been you know, in the international market all over the world really for a while. But
they really are kind of like a poor man's Mariners almost. I mean, they really are active. In many different countries, Venezuela, the Dominican, they've been very active in South Korea, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
Probably the trailblazers, really, in a lot of ways in South Korea. And then how about, we're talking about South Korea, is there a next country? Having edited a lot of this and reading through it, it seems like Colombia is almost like the next, I don't know, frontier. I think for a while there in the 90s, people thought maybe it would be Panama or Brazil. And Panama certainly produced some players, the Riveras, Ruben and Mariano. Well, 1 out of 2 ain't bad. Carlos Lee from Panama. I know Brazil got a lot of hype with Jose Pet in the early 90s with the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays also went to heavy in Curaçao, and there was a little Curaçao boom there with Andrew Jones. I mean, Diagomar Markwell was a player the Blue Jays gave a lot of money to in the mid-90s who never quite panned out. But is Colombia the next country where teams are going to maybe push a little bit more into it? And I guess a related question is Venezuela – a country where people are maybe backing off a little bit because of the political concerns?
Yeah, just with Venezuela, definitely the political and safety concerns are definitely an issue for teams. I mean, if you want to go in and see players in the main parts of the cities there, certainly I think teams are willing to do that. But, it's a big country, and to go to
diverse country.
Yeah, and if you want to go to through some of the more backwoods kind of towns to find players, not every team and not every scout is willing to do that. Understandably, I mean, your safety should come first.
Right.
I mean, it's you want to compare scouting in Latin America to scouting as Georgia and North Florida or whatever. It's tell me when you're driving through Georgia and all of a sudden you get pulled over and guns pulled on you.
Right, absolutely. Or you just get pulled over and say, if you want to keep going on this road, it's going to cost you some cash.
Yeah, it's there's definitely safety issues there.
And Colombia has always been the state. I mean, it's been really almost like a narco state in some ways. Been characterized that way. But it seems like the situation there is quiet at least a little bit. There's a heavy, always surprises me, Ben, that there's so many international tournaments for like 16 and 18-year-olds, world youth and world junior tournaments. They're in Venezuela and in Barquisimeto, is that closer to Colombia or is that on the other side? I don't know my Venezuelan geography.
Yeah, they're next to each other.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. It just seems like there's a constant flow of international teams there, despite the fact that the situation has become less stable over the last decade of Hugo Chavez's rule. But and if it's not Colombia, what's the next country? Is there somewhere in Europe maybe that you think could be? It seems like Germany, there's some, not just because of Max Kepler, but their international teams have gotten a little bit better. Kai Gronauer in the Met system. It seems like there's a little bit of movement with German players, or am I reading a little too much into that?
I mean, Kepler's certainly going to was the guy out of Germany. Colombia is certainly interesting. What's interesting is about Colombia is that you have a guy like the two top Colombians this year, Jose Torres, a right-hander who signed with the Mariners, and Alfaro, the catcher who signed with the Rangers. And Pedro Perez, a third baseman who signed with the Mets for, I think it was $280,000 or around there. And, all good players in their own right, but what's happening is agents are taking them out of Colombia and bringing them to the Dominican Republic to be seen by more teams. Because really, Colombia, Panama, really only half the teams or so in the game really have
any presence
there, really scout. I talked to some directors about some Colombian and Panamanian players sometimes, and they're just like, yeah, I'll be honest, we don't really scout those players at all.
Right.
I don't see them.
Right.
So, but you bring them to the Dominican Republic, work them out in front of, hundreds of scouts. Every team is in the Dominican Republic. Those players are going to be seen, and their market value, could increase. And I think you're starting to see more agents go into Colombia and take those players and, bring them along with the trainer system they have there.
Fascinating.
They're going into there. They certainly see the agents and some of the trainers in the DR who have more resources are definitely going into Colombia and see that. They definitely see that as a country. And frankly, some of those guys are, some of them know they're not scouts, but they know who's going to get money at least,
right?
And they know how to find the players that the scouts are looking for, and they know the terrain, they know the territory, so they need to make money too, and they need to be, sometimes they need to be out in front and ahead of the teams and
that's
ahead of MLB. So if they're going into Colombia to try to get players, that tells me something. Elsewhere, we talked about South Korea, look at all the success that the Cubs have had there with, this year signing Kim, or last year I guess it was, signing Kim before getting Hachuli,
he stopped Choi 10 years ago.
Yeah, Hachuli,
that's right, the muscular ref. That's right.
So,
thank you.
So we affectionately refer to him. But,
we do internal bad nickname of the day. But yeah, the Cubs have been so active, and it seems like every certain clubs have their niches. For a while there, the Angels were very active in South Korea. You saw a couple pitchers. I'm forgetting the guy that we ran up our list.
Yeah, so
young,
everybody else.
Young,
yeah,
Jung.
Young, Il Young,
that's right. Alan Matthews' fave. And then, like I said, the Blue Jays had their periods where they were very active in certain countries. And like you said, the Twins have been very active in Europe. They've been very active in Australia. So they've really gotten much more active in Latin America, not just Sano, but down the line signings as well. So I'm thinking of Polanco, their shortstop they signed, and also Danny Santana, who they signed the year before that, who they like. So it seems like there are very few organizations, Ben. Maybe this is a good way to wrap it up. Are there any organizations that feel like they can win at the major league level consistently or have a good pipeline without tapping international market? Do you think it's even possible for a team? I'm like, there's so much focus that's been put on the Royals. The Royals' Latin efforts don't get, we've given them some attention, but they don't get not talked about really as much because they're guys who are the AA levels. The Hosmers and Moustakas have been out of the draft, but their AZL team and some of their international signings the last couple of years have been extremely fruitful. I know that you like some of their guys quite a bit, but is there any team that's trying to have a successful farm system without going international? Do you really kind of have to involve the international arm now to have a strong farm system?
I think the I don't know if it's by design or what the situation is, but there's certainly teams. The Marlins, the Orioles, those teams have really never spent a lot of money on international prospects. Obviously, hasn't worked out for the Orioles.
The Marlins, another team that's been burned by it with guys like Abraham Nunez, and although I don't think they originally signed a lot of the age gate guys, they got burned on.
I think that's not the only reason why the Orioles have been
right
so unsuccessful over the years. But
if the Orioles, I don't know what their excuse is.
it's not
they're
just
sticking
international.
To Greek players, I think.
So there's certainly teams where they just don't commit. Even the Phillies really—they don't commit a lot of resources to Latin American signing bonuses, but they still produce guys like Jonathan Villar and Carlos Carrasco.
Carlos Ruiz.
Yeah, Carlos Ruiz, or their starting catcher.
Am I allowed to use that, or is that patented by Jose? How do you pronounce his last name?
I think Chooch has gone national.
I think Chooch has gone crazy.
Gone global. So,
I think that's the biggest nickname in baseball that I know of. But yeah, so you're talking about there's ways to produce value for your organization without producing necessarily big leaguers. Trades are definitely one of those.
Yeah, and the majority. I mean, you look at our handbook. I think it's something like 75 or 80% of the players in there are U.S. or drafted players. It's not. It's mostly not international signings, but you can gain a big leg up in international signings because the draft. Everyone gets draft picks. If you are, you can be maybe you don't draft well, but you're still going to get, this
right.
number two or number five overall pick. You're always going to have a first round pick unless you lose it for a compensation.
Right.
Generally, maybe some teams spend more in the back of the draft than others on some of the signability guys who fall. But every team gets draft picks. There's no rule that says you have to sign, there's no floor for how much
right.
you can. But you have to spend. You don't have to spend $1 million on international prospects if you don't want. Which four or five teams showed this year.
That's right.
Or if you want, you can be the Yankees and the Mariners and spend upwards of $5 million.
Or you can be the A's and come and go.
Times. Yeah, you can spend 20 times what some of the lower level teams in the market are doing. So
because the A's were
a big
so
advantage
active.
To gain there.
Yeah, the A's were so active. They were kind of pioneers in some ways in the Dominican Republic. We had that great photo in the 80s of Sandy Alderson, a lot of other A's, front office guys, A, wearing short shorts, which was hilarious, but B, kind of like mapping out, okay, here's where we're going to build our complex and that kind of thing. And soon thereafter, the A's did, they were the ones who signed Santiago Casilla back when his name was Jairo Garcia, but Miguel Tejada, obviously, they had some successes in Latin America during their stretch. Tejada's obviously the most obvious one, but didn't they originally sign Nelson Cruz?
They had
a Mario Encarnacion, who was an outfielder who they got some trade value out of. Jose Ortiz, the second baseman, they got, again, some trade value out of. So they had a pretty active stretch in Latin America that's dried up in the last decade, and now they're trying to kind of restart that. So.
Yeah, I think they're trying to put more resources in. You can see they're signing guys in Korea and Taiwan and Dominican Republic with Vicmal De La Cruz and Venezuela with Renato Nunez and some other guys there. It's you look at their DSL club and some of their younger Latin players are just go through their top 30 in the prospect
right.
handbook and find the Latin players and you can count them on one hand.
That's it. And
one
of them were acquired from other organizations.
Yeah, or just the homegrown ones they have. I mean, there's I don't know if Henry Rodriguez, is he still in there? Or
I think they traded him.
Yeah.
Didn't they trade him this offseason?
That's right, they did. And then
that's the first name that comes to my mind, though.
Yeah, but
you
other than
the
him, they
game.
Have, Michael Anoa, who's,
right.
not done by any means, but certainly not hasn't progressed as they had hoped. You know, we'll see what happens when he hopefully pitches in 2012.
9 innings so far as a pro.
Yeah, 10
Mike
innings, something like that, and he's going to be out all year. So
it's sad,
it's disappointing because he he was throwing 95 before he got hurt.
I mean, you want to see talent, you know.
Yeah.
But if we're baseball fans at heart, we want to see talented players play. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that we thought that it was smart to spend $4.25 million on one 16-year-old Dominican player. But that doesn't mean that we were rooting for that guy to fail. We were rooting for that guy to come out and chuck it. And we wanted to see Michael Lanoa. And I think we all still want to see Michael Lanoa pitch.
There were other teams that I'm convinced that would have wanted to sign it. That were upset that the bidding stopped it. You know, 4.25. So, but you look at, you know, with their farm system, there's really not a lot of Latin guys there. Look at their DSL club. You know, it's okay. You never know. Some of those guys might pop up. But, then you take a look at guys like De La Cruz and Nunez and, you know, their new, you know, Korean catching sign they just made. Some of the other Latin players that they signed this year. It is. No,
I had a 1-4 shot.
No. but yeah, they have a lot more international talent that they brought in this year, and I think that's probably going to improve for them going forward. But you know, it's not just, you know, 1 year. You have to do it year after year, which is what teams like the Yankees have done, teams
right.
like the Mets in the past have done to be able to continually bring along international prospects.
Obviously, you have a lot to say on the matter, and it's kind of cool. I did not realize we were talking for almost an hour here, and we probably could keep going on and on. But I know you have calls to make. My phone's blowing up. I have calls to make. So I think we're going to have a second part with J.J. Cooper probably next week, tracking down when the American League is all over, if you're up for that.
I'm game.
All right, Ben's game, and I will be back on Monday with Aaron Fitt when we wrap up the college weekend and look forward to the next one. Hopefully that'll be on Monday. We're still working out our technical issues, but I think this podcast probably going to be the one that sounds the best as far as both of us being here, a couple of new pieces of equipment that we dug out of the archives, and feeling pretty good about the progress of the Baseball America podcast. So, Ben, great stuff. I appreciate the time, and we'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. For Ben Badler, I'm John Manuel. So long, everybody.